At Insight Myanmar, we see our platform as more than just a podcast. Through storytelling, interviews, and shared experiences, we're dedicated to amplifying the voices of Myanmar's people and their allies in the fight for justice, dignity, and human rights. In that sense, it's part of a broader movement and something of a bridge connecting a global audience to the heart of Myanmar's struggle. By engaging with diverse perspectives, artists, activists, scholars, and everyday citizens, we strive to create a ripple effect of awareness and change, empowering individuals to join a global community dedicated to supporting Myanmar's future. Mimi, thank you for joining us on this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so at just 21 years old, you have accomplished more in your young lifetime and little and lesser years on this planet than many people that are two or three times your age have accomplished when it comes to activism and advocacy. As I was digging into your background before this interview and looking at some of the work you'd done and the ages with which you were doing it, I was blown away. I think as our listeners will be as well. We're going to be talking about your the work you've been doing in Thailand, specifically where you're from, how that relates to Myanmar and Thai-Myanmar relations, as well as where that fits in the broader network of Milk Tea Alliance, through which you're also very active. But for this conversation, that all starts with you. And as I understand, the beginning of your story starts with you having grown up in Isan, and then at a young age, I believe it was 16, moving to Bangkok, and from then starting to see some things that weren't quite right and wanting to do something about it. So take the story from there. Talk about your young years growing up. You're still quite young, but talk about your younger years growing up in Isan, and then that move to Bangkok and some of your early work.
Yeah, sure. So when I was young, yeah, you're right. I was growing up in Isan. It's like just a region, but my province called Mahasarakham. And my mom and dad raised me there. So the thing is, my dad is a really like political person. Like he's into politics. He's always like turn on the news and like always encourage me to talk and questions of things. Like there is the time that me like got into an argument with teachers when I was in like middle school, and like other parents might be like so mad like from the kids that talk back to adults, but my dad said like, you were right. Girlies, you like, you are on. That is my dad. So I think that has like a really like impactful of who I am, who am I right now. And yeah, so I always have a like a thoughts and opinions on stuff, even though I don't really have, but my dad always like encouraged me to have it. So even though I don't know anything, I still have two questions. I like spill some things about it. Always I talk about like peace. I talk about like politics when I was young. Even I don't really know what is it, but to like to make my dad proud at that time. So that's just my background, like of how am I like growing up, like being able to speak and questions of things, but it's just not like just that input is not enough. When I moved to Bangkok to study my high school, that is the time that a lot of things happened. Actually, when I was in Mahasarakham, I also do a lot of like online things, like commenting and like follow the news online. Like when the coup happened, I also had like opinions on Facebook. I always like kind of like follow the news and mostly online, but I don't really understand the politics at the time. I just like, no, I don't like coup. I don't like those politicians. I don't like junta. I don't like those parties, blah, 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 something like that. But when I moved to Bangkok and there is like the incidents are like the situation that is like really happening at the moment. It's just not like the news that feels like so far away or like the news happening in like another provinces, but it's something that it me feel like it is something that happening right now, and I have a chance like to do something, like be able to do something at that time. I'm in Bangkok and like this is the right time, and like I mentioned in others like interview that I would feel really guilty, like would feel like really bad about myself if I didn't like go to do something. That incident is about the enforced disappearance of Wan Chanleum Sansaksit, who was like a Thai activist that disappeared in Cambodia.
So he was protesting in broad daylight in front of the Cambodian embassy in Bangkok, yeah. And he was disappeared.
That is correct. At that time, I was like so young. I don't really know the route of Bangkok, and I quietly like talked to my mom and asked my mom if I can do that. And mom say, yeah, sure, I will drive you to BTS.
Oh wow! So your family, you came from a family of political activists.
I would say that like my mom doesn't really like politics person, but she's like I feel like she's kind of a woman that like growing up don't really have a chance to do something that she wants. So I think she like for me to have the chance that she never get, and she wants me to explore and learn. Yeah, so that is the thing. Yeah, it is a political thing, but actually, I was at that time before the protest or like this situation is happened, I was more like into feminism and like gender justice stuff. I have been reading about it, and I didn't really expect it when I go to the protest. Like at the first protest, it's full of like activists, not much of feminist like activists, but after the protest, and it's like the massive protest of young like people, the pro-democracy protest happened, there's like a space for young feminists to do movement, so I joined that. Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned that your father was into politics from a young age, and that encouraged you. What type of politics was he interested in?
So it's not the politics. I mean, he's like into politics. Like he's a red shirt. So to give some context, red shirt movement in Thailand is a grassroots movement demanding democracy and economic justice, something like that. And grassroots movement like often got like stigmatized like from public of being like poor because they are like poor, and like most of Bangkok person at that time and like royalists or like those kind of people will say that like these kind of groups like who is like grassroots poor people shouldn't have a right to vote because they are not like educated. This is the narrative that's in like back then, and actually it's not really normal like for Bangkok people to be a red shirt. Like they need some kind of like critical thinking. Like at that time it was like so chaotic, like the narrative that come from like the royalists, is like yellow shirt movement also strong. Yeah, so it was like maybe like I don't know, my dad also like from Bangkok, but he was like support red shirt movement. He even joined the protest in Bangkok. Yeah, and that is the thing that I was saying, that he is into politics.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so in August 2020, you volunteered with the Women's Liberation Group that was later renamed the feminist liberation front Thailand. And I want to prompt you to talk about your definition of feminism, and not just feminism, but feminism as a Thai person. I'm talking about this in the context of, we recently did an interview with Emily at Minutia Organization, and went deep into not just the concepts of feminism, but feminism within Southeast Asia, within kind of the Thai, Laos, Myanmar sphere that she was in, and how it was defined differently by activists in that context than where it came from in more white Western contexts. And so I'd like you to share, what is your definition of a feminism, and what type of feminism are you advocating for?
Yeah, sure. You're right. That feminism for me, so okay, with the normal definitions, it would be that like the idea or concept, like that one, gender equality and gender justice for all gender, like all sex, like all the people. But I would say that like in the context of like Thailand, feminism is might not like as like Western feminist, or like, I would say that like it, feminism is something that is like flexible, and they have been reclaimed like from like various movements reclaim like the power. I would say like for my context, the unique things about feminist movement in Thailand is that, first is we are claiming about gender justice for like definitely all of the genders. Like I don't think we have an argument like other countries about like trans people or like something. And I think like mostly in Thai community, we are like really like support each other. Like, I mean, when we say feminist, we always say like trans women, LGBTQ, non-binary person. I would say that is the first point and the first step, because most of the leaders or like who like paved the way of feminist movement in the past, mostly they are lesbians as well. They always be lesbians, and like because the like most of the leaders, they are in the communities. So we don't really have that kind of argument in Thailand. And another thing is that the unique things of the movement at that time is we want to bring the agenda of feminism as gender justice and like to anti sexual harassment and like gender based violence in the social movement. I would say that it's like a common problems around the world, that like even though the mainstream activists like in like calling for a democracy or like justice, they might not really have a gender sensitivity or like awareness. So it still have a lot of like sexual harassment. It's like still a lot of the like abusive like things that happen and in the movement. So I would say that the presence of feminist movement at that time is not just advocate to another to people that we like democracy should be with the gender justice, but it also like to educate and like advocate inside the movement that like if you want to build a like society that you like imagine of, or like your ideal society that you call it like equality, justice, you need to push it like with parallel with the gender justice as well. Yeah, so I might not say the big word, but I would say that like I also agree that like the approach that we need to use right now, at that time I was kind of have an input a lot on the collective feminist stuff. So I would say that like for me, feminism is not just something that like we spill the theory or like we spill of like big word or vocabulary, but how we are really living the life. I mean, usually in the patriarchy like world, we might like feel like in like a woman or like small people, we need to fight each other. It's like to, I mean, challenge or like competitive like world, and often that like as a woman, like we are not really encouraged to support each other. In the patriarchy world, we were taught to be like hate each other. So I would say that collective feminist things is something that like we see the pain of each other's in the oppressive world, and we want to drive it together as a feminist groups. So I think that's the key for us. It's like, yeah, to challenge the side of the oppressive like patriarchal system and counter it with another culture such as like collective and the idea of feminist to create a safer environment for all the people. Yeah.
Right. So there's so much there in your reply. I mean, you're talking about forming collectives and solidarity. So it's not, you're not pitting women leaders against women leaders. And so there's this shared sense of support that's going on. You're also talking about in resistance movements themselves, there could be very progressive resistance and opposition movements that are not themselves modeling the type of behavior that one would hope that these type of movements would be encouraging. And sometimes there's a pressure, I certainly see this in Myanmar, there's a pressure not to want to speak out about this or call as much attention for fear of the greater good and the kind of ammunition that you give the greater authoritarian state to want to see the splintering apart. So it's just this sense of wanting to stay quiet. But you know, you've done anything but stay quiet. You've organized flash feminist mobs to protest gender-based violence and sexual harassment. One example of a performance art that you've done, which I found really interesting, was how you and your friends performed this Chilean feminist anthem, "A Rapist in Your Path," in Thai at different protest sites. You've also talked about how in Thai society, you've been scolded or criticized for things that, as you've called it, just for being a girl, that a boy would not or a male would not be condemned or talked about in this way. And so moving the conversation then from your definition of what feminism is and what it is in Thai context to then what you started to do about it, and some of these examples I gave and probably much more that you can share, I would invite you to also start to open up some of the activism and activities you've actually done in bringing these to the streets.
There's a lot you mentioned about the accomplishments, right? But I was like, this isn't like this accomplishment for me. I'm not sure it's like an actions, and I was like, the only things that guarantee me some things or like something evidences is my cases that I have been prosecuted. Yeah, it's my certifications of those things, I don't know. So activities we have been doing. Okay, so when I was younger, like minor, mostly I've done it with the group of friends and senior activists who was like feminist activists, and mostly we done like two side of thing. And first thing that you mentioned about the perform the rapist a rapist in your path by Chinese feminists, it was like translate and written by my Thai friends, and we perform it together. And other than that is that this performance also adjust it into various types of issues. So we adjust the lyrics like of "A Rapist in Your Path" into like different of agenda, such as like about the students. So in Thai we have a specific name for the title. It's called Sida Lui Fai. Sida is the name of the character in the Ramayana, and like Lui Fai is like you going to the fire. And this fate is means like is a character that went on the fight to prove that they are pure, like they were like challenging and like forced to walk through fire to prove that like they are pure, they are innocent and those things. Yeah, so the narrative is just like we don't want to prove anymore. And these lyrics also adds us such as like Nakrien Lui Fai. Nakrien means students, and Lui Fai is still the same thing. So we address it like about the education system, about like the student movement, and we also address it like up to the protests that come up and want us to perform. We address the lyrics into like we also have the version of condemning the court, something like that, the constitutional court, about the economic, about the workers, right? It's like, oh my gosh, so much of the lyrics. And that is the thing that I feel like just what lyrics can, like, we can adjust it into, like, many of performance that, like, we can do, we can, like, go and combine in with another movements as well. But at that time, I was, because the protest was quite, like, quick, and it quite I would say it quite fast. I mean, everything just went so fast and quick, and I was so young at the time, so it was more like something's up and I did it, something's up and I do something to deal with it it's not really the times that I really have a thought on myself of what, like, what is, like, the action, like, or, like, I would say that, like, my input is not that, like, much as this time. So it's more, like, people need my help, I would do it. Yeah. So after that, yeah, I also believe in about the collective feminist movement. I also, besides from Youth Tea Alliance Thailand, now I'm also in the club called Fem Samyan. It's the independent feminist club based in Chulalongkorn University. And I would say that back in the time of the protests, like, the students were rising, there is not really a feminist club in universities that's, like, mainstream, but mostly people just come together in the feminist movement as a feminist liberation from Thailand. But now I would say that feminist club is, like, becoming, like, rise in Thailand. And in Thammasat, we have more than, like, 8 clubs, like, of feminists, like, based on their faculties. And I would say that when I knew that the feminist club might be, like, have a lot of people and people, like, become more interested, like, to join, we gathered and we have some things like party called Feminist Council, but it's not really council, it's just a fun name. It's like a young feminist network, and we do something together, such as, like, we saw that now feminist club, even though we're not and, like, official, like, officers to deal with the gender-based violence in university. But somehow students, like, are more comfort to report those incidents to feminist club. So it's just, like, somehow we can't, and the challenging is the skills, experiences, and, like, the trauma that also in the feminist club, somehow we use the anger to deal with the case. And we just done the training, like, about what is gender-based violence. We just talk about the standard that we should have together, about the SOP, about the what should, like, do no harm principle, or, like, protocol that we should use, like, with each other, like, in the case, like, the role of feminist club. We can do advocate, we can be as, like, referees, but do we really? But I don't think we should be the case manager, because it needs a lot of skills and training, and it should be, like, someone professional. So I would say the, like, feminist club is more, it's like on the advocate for the official system to have the functions to deal with this situation. So yeah, we've done it together. So I would say that, like, now is the performing of how collective feminists really share the resources and how we really drive together. Yeah.
Right. You mentioned just before that you when you were talking about your achievements, your accomplishments, with a laugh, you mentioned that part of that was how you were persecuted. So that leads into, you know, one of the events that happened that brought you more into into being a known figure in Thailand, which was that when in October 2020, when you were protesting against the conditions of women prisoners in Thai prisons, that you were arrested, and you were just 16 years old when you were arrested. And so this was a really big deal for this ended up being a very big case. You represented yourself in this case as well. Talk about that experience.
So at the time, yeah, I was 16 when I gave a speech. It was a big protest, and I was giving about the free political prisoner. So calling for better environment for in prison, and, like, about the women's prisoners as well, like, calling for, like, human rights and those stuff. So at that time, I would say that my case, it sounds like a big deal. But there are also a lot of my friends that, like, got into all these incidents, and they got, like, persecuted. I mean, my friends, one of my best friends also got Les Majesté Law, and she needs to flee to Vancouver now. She's one of my very best friends, and one of my friends, like, they are now still in the prison because of the Les Majesté Law as well. So I would say that, like, my case is not really dangerous in, like, compared to others, but still, it's still, like, shouldn't happen at that time. Okay, so the funny thing is, at that time, the police filed me because they thought me as wrong, like, another person. They thought that I am like another leader because we look the same. So, but because because the police already do the file and the documents and the stuff, so they just submit it, even though they know that it's not that person. And also that is, so I just like got along with it. And I mean, because I am also, I was the person that also going on the stage at the time, but they didn't really target me at all my first case. Anyway, this case after I, so in the juvenile court, they have something called diversion. It is a special measures for like juvenile or like children to go into like some special, it's like program to just dismiss their cases. So I was convinced a lot to go to this program a lot. I mean, even the court, like when I was like in front of the judge and my dad was like, because I was like, no, I don't want to go onto this process. And he just turned his head and asked my dad, like, what do you say, my dad? And it's like so disrespectful. But yeah, I still didn't get to join the program. And I fight the case. And anyway, the judge dismissed the case and just like let me go because he said that like I used the rights that under the constitutional law. Yeah, that's my first case and the case that I got dismissed. Strictly like some of the successful stories from that. Yeah, but another case from this case, I have 7 cases. So another case beside from this case, I was targeted because and that in 2021, I was more about calling for qualified vaccinations for kids about like during the COVID-19 times. So I was protesting a lot in front of the Ministry of Public Health and got a lot into of like argument, like a lot. And from that protest, I got I got fired from defamations of officers. I was sued by the spokesperson, the former spokesperson of public health that sued me, and we need to be like in the negotiate room like for like kind of long. And yeah, he's also forced me to write us like apologize letter to the Ministry of Public Health, who is right now the prime minister candidate somehow. Yeah, and another case is also filed directly from the Ministry of Public Health. That is two of my big cases. And from this case, I joined the program because the process is so intense, and that spokesperson, that person also like pressure me and my friends a lot on this case. So it was kind of like not really cool, like not really cool process. And I mean, that's my main case. From another case, like 4 or 5 cases, it's just like about giving a speech, charged from emergency decree, charged from Public Assembly Act, just like that. Yeah, after being appear like and targeted, just appear on the protest and give a speech would give me like keys. Yeah.
But in some of these cases, the punishment was so arcane. It was really a punishment of humiliation. I mean, you mentioned the demand or request to write the letter of apology, the personal letter of apology to this politician, this health minister. But then there was another very arcane punishment to, you know, polish the riot shields of the police, or to be photographed, you know, physically kneeling down in an apology, which I think even the Thai government later decided this was inappropriate, and that this type of declaration and punishment shouldn't happen. But you know, they really seem to go after you.
Yeah, talking about punishment, actually, not just the apologize letter. Okay, in the negotiation room, the conditions of this person asked me like to write a letter. Like I need to like, what is this called? Like sorry.
Yeah.
The sorry sign. Like sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Putting your hands together.
Yeah, put your hand together. Yeah. And he needs me to do this because he wants to take a picture. And I said, like, no, why I need to do that? And his eyes, like, become green. And, like, at the beginning, he was like, smile, I'm, like, a kind person. I'm a kind officer. I would, like, speak nice to you. But at the time when I reject to do that, he was, like, so angry. And he was, like, turns red. And then I was, like, okay, I will do it. Because, like, the judge come and, like, asked me to do it. So I was, like, okay. And the and his secretary like somehow got a picture and he posted on Facebook that I sorry to him, so I report this to the judge.
Oh wow.
And court already like asked him to put it down because it's like against the law and against like what the condition is and also against like obviously like child rights and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he needed to took this down. But for the case that I need to like done with the Ministry of Public Health, I need to clean the statues of monarchy in the ministry like place. So I said like, if you want me to do something useful for minister, why don't you just ask me to clean the hotel or the hospital or clean me like health center and stuff. But no, they just want the symbolic things that we need to clean the monarch statues and stuff. So we need to clean it and we need to like take a picture of me like cleaning it. Yeah. Yeah. That punishment is like, no, big no.
But what's amazing to me in hearing these stories is that, well, these stories in and of themselves are really an incredible insight into an activist, a single activist taking on a system. But within this whole discussion, we have to remember you're 16 years old as all of this is happening. So like, what did it feel like to be a 16-year-old doing all of this alone in a room full of adults with the institutional system that you're confronting?
I will say that I still 16, 17. I mean, I was 17, but it maybe like that, not like different from 16. So at the time, in the court case, I think I was around 17 or 18. I'm not sure, but still in the juvenile court, I will say that the thing is because I have my friends. We have the friends that we did it together.
Yeah.
Actually, one of friends that also got charged with me in this case, and we done everything together is Moong Nettipon, who is the passed away in jail. She is the one that we did it together. And another one is my best friend that she fled away to Vancouver. I would say that like most of the person who got into this case and we've like get away together are like fighting, I mean, all the things together are now like separated. And we like, I know it's not a really good ending for all of this, but I will say at that time, having friends that encouraged everyone maybe in the wrong ways turns out like to be the only things that like encourage ourselves, encourage the communities like to move forward. Yeah.
I'm also wondering, I don't know if you can answer this question because it's a very kind of meta question. And that's looking at, you know, at this young age, and you're only a few years older now than when this all happened. But I'm just curious about where you got the maturity to be able to hold these concepts and advocate for these kinds of causes that you were pushing towards. I mean, these are very sensitive, delicate, and complex issues that you're taking on. I mean, there's the courage aspect of what it's like to bring that challenge to system, but then before the courage is just the maturity to be able to analyze and look at these issues in a way that many other people in society aren't, and be able to, you know, first recognize there's a problem, but then, and then the harder work after to dissect or diagnose where this problem is coming from and what possible things can be done about it, and then to take the action. But, you know, it's a lot of maturity bundled up in the ability to be able to look critically and analyze critically and then make a move. And that's why for, you know, many people, it takes a lot of years at being able to see the same things over and over and over before it starts to click and you start to see patterns and you start to analyze it in a certain way. But when you're just 16 years old, not only do you not have as many years behind you in seeing these systems, but your mind is also not developed in the way that an older adult's mind might be. As you're holding this. And so I don't know if you have the kind of metacognition analysis to look behind the curtain at what gave you this maturity to be able to analyze and then take action in these very complex ways at such a young age. Maybe that's a question we have to ask you in 20 years when you have a bit more hindsight and perspective. But otherwise, do you have a sense of like what it was about you or your background or your conditioning or your mind that allowed you to engage in this kind of complex way at that very young age?
Yeah, I do actually understand what are you asking. So I would say that like that's true, that like after, like, before doing the action, we need to have, like, some analyze or like, experience to see the patterns of things so we can see what is, like, the things that we really should do, like, to do action and see the gap and else. I would say that, like, at that time, when I was 16, I don't really have that things. I don't really have that kind of logical thinking, of thinking of, like, I couldn't really, like, think, like myself now, for real. But I would say that those experiences also have helped me the way to, like, can be able to see the loop and the patterns and stuff. At the time, the things that drive me, that drove me to do those actions first is, like, the background, like what you say, the background, like, the confidence that I got from my childhood, like, even though I was, like, wrong, all right, I don't know, but I need to speak. It's just, like, that energy, like, yeah. And another thing is, I would say it's about, because the first thing is just to drive me to do, like, calling for justice, right? It still, like, didn't have, like, at that time, it was not really, like, pop up or, like, blow up at that time. So it was, like, purely my energy that want to do that. But after, how can I do that? I would say that's still, like, my friends, the thing, and, like, people keep encouraging that we were doing the right thing and those stuff. But I always have the sense in my mind, like, when we plan to do some action and we didn't really do, like, the, like, good for, like, risk analysis or, like, risk assessment, I always have a questions in mind, like, should I ask this? But I mean, like, oh, they all know. I mean, they must already know. And later, I would say, that, oh, they don't know. They don't really what to do. So I would say that, like, okay, I have some gut feelings of asking, or, like, gut feelings of some, like, analyzing those things more. But I would say because I was young, I was kind of self-doubt. I was not really confident enough to, like, raise my hands or, like, asking questions because I assumed that everyone might already talk about it or know about it. So I would say that, like, at that time, it's not just me when I was young, but those experiences helped me on this time that I'm more confident to trust my gut feeling and I'm more confident to ask myself and believe myself, like, what should be the questions that I should ask, what should be the answer that we should have. Yeah, those experiences, the fail down, the rising, I mean, it's kind of exploring, like, I mean, it's not wrong, it's not fault, it's, like, it's not right things, I mean, at the time. And I would say that, like, yeah, so it helped me till now, and also the politics stuff is still the same. So I would say that, like, yeah, I'm grateful for those experiences that I can see the loop and see the pattern and to know, experience the feelings of those movements, like, or the feelings of doing actions in the movement, like the real movement at that time that paved me to be me now. Yeah.
Right. Do you feel that you're something of an outlier in Thai youth society in terms of the values and the activism that you're doing? Or do you feel that there's many more like you among Thai youth that are leaning in this direction and starting to be concerned about the things you're concerned with?
I would say that, okay, so me in the past would say that, like, I would be friends with someone that is, like, also, like, the same as me, because at that time I only have activist friends. But now I entered, like, university, and I would say that, like, no, I would say, like, the good quality of, like, being, like, maybe movement, like, mobilizer, organizer, or, like, action activist also needs a skills or, like, needs the capacity of making friends and to be friends with anyone and to listen to everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like I would be friends with just activists. No, I can be friends with anyone in this world, and I would say something that we can relate it. I also, I would say that I spend, like, 1 and 2 years to be fit in, like, to relieve myself from the movement and to fit in the society again. Mm. Yeah, I would. And yeah, it was hard for me to be an activist. I mean, okay, first thing is about the judging from others, like, from outsider, like, my friends now, like, they were trained, like, open my videos when I shaved my head in the protest, and they were like, oh, this is you, and I was like, yeah, I won't do it again. So But now I'm more like blending in and I feel more comfort with my communities and my new friends in the university. But I would say that, yeah, it needs to pass like a lot of like the struggle in my mind. Like sometimes when I was younger, I always think that like just there's only few groups of friends that truly know what we have been like doing together. Mm. Or it's like just like few friends, like my best friends who really know what we have been through together. Like my friends like from not in the actual circle wouldn't really understand it, what it mean or like what I have been through. But until now, I would say that it doesn't really matter for me now. I mean, I would say that I just look at it and I feel grateful that I have those experiences. And I would say that if I can like use those experiences and like things that I got from those experiences with my current situation now, like making friends, and like invite them to join, like if they're interested into human rights thing, and I don't really gatekeep it. I mean, if you want to do it, you do it, and we can support each other. So I would say that like it's still a struggle. It's still struggling a lot of like imposter feelings, and like feeling of like being like afraid of people judging. But I would say if you want to do it, you need to do it, and you can do it in some way. Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned this head shaving incident. That's another of your journey of performance art and activism. This was in 2021, part of feminist liberation. You called it the naked mob. This is where, you know, this concept of in Thai society, maybe beyond Thai society, but certainly within Thai culture, the woman's hair is very much tied to her beauty and her image. And so this sense of sacrificing sacrificing your hair, this was a symbol of protesting and of wanting to call attention. I'd like to prompt you to tell us what this symbol represented. You mentioned just before it was quite shocking to some of your friends. It was also quite shocking, as I understand, to people who didn't even know you, but just saw the event taking place, that young Thai women were getting their head shaved, that it was, that the spectacle nature of it, which is, you know, what good performance art and advocacy does, shocked people into wanting to pay attention. What did you want them to pay attention to? What did this act mean to you?
Yeah. I would say that at that time, it was all about me sometimes. I mean, it's not just me, but at the time, the protest is quite low. And I remember my thoughts. My thoughts at that time, like before shaving my head, is just like, this is maybe my last protest of giving a speech. I would say, like, I mean, I feel myself like I might not be able to give a speech anymore. Like, because the protest is quite, like slower down, like, the fever has gone. And, like, to shave my head is one of the things that, also the gut feeling, the feelings that I feel like I want to do, like, for a long time. And the problem is still, like, present and exists. At that time, the prime minister that come from the coup is still there. And a lot of my friends warned me to not like giving like some promise. They just, okay, just shave the head, but do not promise, like, because I still do it. I speak like I will shave my head until this prime minister is quit or like left. So it's like I make a promise with public and myself. So it was a really big thing for me. And I would say that, yeah. So you saw it like feel like tough at the front. Okay, behind it's also tough for me, like, to shave my head and like being bald is also affect a lot of myself. I also been through a lot of like questions about like existential crisis after shaving my head. But I would say it is worth it. I mean, because at that time people more like became more aware of the situation and became like trigger of what we have been doing in the protest. So I would say that I didn't expect people to give attention to me, but it was more my gut feelings of doing the last thing I would do in the protest, or I won't be feel like disappointed in myself. Yeah.
Right. Now, of course, shaving one's head as a man or a woman has a special significance in Buddhism. This is a process of ordaining to become a monk or a nun. So was there any, did you draw any inspiration from Buddhist concepts in doing this?
Not really. Actually, I also come from a Christian family.
Uh-huh, I see.
But I'm not really into those. But yeah, there is a time that I shaved my head and I was like, having like some existential crisis that drew me into like spiritual stuff. But I would say that like, no, it's like fully about like protesting. It's fully about against the stereotype, against like the things, against the cool and those stuff. So it's more of like those symbolic action. Yeah.
Right. And then as your activism and advocacy continued, you weren't just getting pressure and persecution from authorities, but also from right wingers and nationalists that then went on to dox you and to reveal your personal identities. That must have been really hard.
Yeah, I would say that at that time, those kind of things and those kind of harassment became like normalized. I would say that like if it's me right now, I would just like sue this person, sue these people, and like doing some counterback of these people. But at the time, it become normalized, and we feel like we can't do anything about this. But yeah, my file, my like police file, my documents and those stuff is still appear on the internet because of this doxing. So I would say the nationalists. Groups, this kind of nationalist, like Yellow Wings group, organized Yellow Wings, they are more like, they are not independent stuff, they are not organic, they are organized with like authority, like because they also got the file from the police, which like I never seen it before. Yeah, so until now, this action and operation is still continue, and yeah, it's another thing, but at the time I experienced myself about this kind of information operations from the right wings, and they targeted most of activists and discredit them. At that time we saw it as like no funny. I mean no harm people. I mean no, not just a big deal, but for me, like from my perspective now, these tools like of information operation is like one of the important tools and important operations that we need to look at it if we want to understand the Thai politics right now.
Right. So do you, with that doxing, do you feel unsafe?
Yeah, somehow, because like they show my ID. Yeah. It shows my ID, it shows like my face. And yeah, I was like doxed like parallel with my friends, with Boom, with my best friends. So it was the thing. I would say that it's not only scare, but I would say that it's the feel of like it's the feel of like sad that I didn't do anything about it. And I would say that it's always be a question in my heart if like is there the thing that I can do with these things. I mean, my doxings like in like situations also been on like some reports from with Amnesty International about the women like human rights defender be, like got harassed like from state, from authority. But I still want to know that like from this thing, can I do something with it like for real? Yeah, it's like the question is not, I don't really feel like scared now, but it's still like something that's still stuck in my mind.
Well, I mean, I think that's the point. I think the point is intimidation, it's power, it's control. It's to want to make you afraid, to want to make you feel unsafe. And with that, I mean, that segues into this concept of burnout and depression, which you've also spoken about. You know, you've mentioned that you have friends that are in prison now, you've had friends that have died, you have friends that are in exile. I mean, these are friends that are very young as yourself, and yet they're facing these conditions. And you know, and young protesters that have developed PTSD, even not being so old in years, just these kind of emotional and psychological scars that have come from persecution in Thailand. And so, you know, with that, I understand you've created this well-being initiative as a safe space to support and counsel fellow activists that are dealing with stress and trauma. and to want to really invest in promote this idea that the state shouldn't be prosecuting protesters of youth. So talk about, you know, we've mentioned the work you've done into activism, your ideals behind it, the work that you're doing, but then the other side of that process is the pain that you experience as a result of going against the state and these right wingers and nationalists and everything else. So talk about how that's affected you and your friends, as well as what you've tried to do to create these safe spaces and well-being initiative.
Yeah, so this is a really big question for me. So first I would say that this kind of situations affects a lot of us without really knowing about it. I mean, I would say that if I can say that I don't really get I can say that I don't traumatized from protesting, but the protest that just happened in Indonesia, they affect me a lot. I got emotional from the protest, from the crackdown, like a lot of emotional things. And so I know that those protest experiences definitely affect me a lot. Yeah. And how can I really create? I would say that it's still not really successful, because I still, if I don't want to be the person who create safe space for others without really create safe space for me. Some questions I still haven't really got an answer for myself yet. I still got a lot of questions. The sense of powerless in the community. There is some point in my life after the protest that I started questions about everything, because I don't want to do something that I don't know the answer. I mean, I want to do if we are going to do this, what is the values behind it? What is the action? I truly want to understand it fully. So after those experiences, and I got into my situation right now, the challenge is that the loop and the pattern of the Thai politics, that the last thing that the constitutional court that just kick out the prime minister right from civilian government, I was not really surprised of it. I don't really surprised of it at all. We have been analyzed. We have been known that the judicial coup is something that easier tools for the right wings, for the elites to use, and how the elites, they are somehow work together to got the things they want, and the pattern is just sit there. So I would say the tie there that's come from me is we can see it, we could see, we be able to see what is going to be, what is going to happen, and what is the past, and also somehow if I can see the gap of what we can do, it's a good thing. But mostly my exhaustions come from that I need to explain it to others around again and again and again and again about the situation. And still, because I say this to someone, that some of the problems that occurs in the country, it doesn't really relate it. The small people doesn't really have a power to do anything with it. Some of the problems, they doesn't really require the people power, you know what I mean? Some problems, people power is really important to guide it. But some problems we seem really far away. We seem really it's about lobbying, it's about policy, it's about the people who in the upper, who is the elites and policy makers, and we don't really have a role of doing it without So I would say that it's the curiosity, it's the loss, it's the tiredness, it's the sense of powerless that I am facing right now. And something that really calmed me or helped me feel feeling better is talking to the senior activists who are so experienced like me. They all know what I am feeling. They all know what the exhausting of warning people around you, and they don't listen, look like, and how what they feel. So this is really healed me. But for the young activists that I'm working with, I would say that I don't really want the patterns that happen in the movement to happen in the movement again. I know it's hard, and maybe it's we can't prevent it. Like there's a lot of mistake that happen in the movement, such as like there's a lot of group that feel left behind and they become more radical and against together because they feel like they don't like the ways that others do. I don't really want the other generations of mobilizing movement to experience it again. So if there is something that I feel like it's a gap from those stuff, like we don't talk much as we should, or like we didn't really have a meeting before the incidents, but right now if we can, I would encourage everyone to do it. So it's more like not just about like telling about well-being and like about like mental health, because I know a lot of activists doesn't really buy that, but I would say just create a space that like better and safer and like more makes sense for the new generations of doing activism, so they can experience like those without like going into the loop again. So we mean like just break the loop, but in my community, yeah, the big picture is still hard to break, so just start from my circle first.
And then with that solidarity and awareness raising you're trying to do, there's then the stratification of Thai society, in the sense that you've, and this has been used against you, this has been weaponized in some criticism that you've received, that that your activism is coming from a place of your socioeconomic standing, coming from Isan, and that and something that you've really tried to push back against is that no, that you're not taking the stands you're taking, and you're not promoting the kinds of issues that you're putting into public light because you come from Isan, or because people might think that your background is less privileged. These are national issues that affect all society that you think need to be brought into the light. So talk about how you've responded to that criticism.
I would say that a lot of activists I know, they have a stronger sense of root, like what they come from, more than me. But because I was raised in the middle class Bangkok parents, even though I was in Isan, but yeah, I also got a lot of like okay, better than born in Bangkok anyway. So I don't like full on and need to know more or study more of other provinces because I born there. Yeah. So I think to have a root, to know your root, and to have communities is one of the strong points of activists. I really respect the activists from my province, from my regions, and they mostly fight on about land rights, about like the food sovereignty. So, but for me, it's just not background, but the background does affect me. How my dad raised me is affect me, yeah. But the problems and issues that appears, it's like visibility for everyone. I agree with it's how your experience shape like your way of thinking on these problems, and like how experience like shape like to be you like right now. But I also agree that growing in like other provinces than Bangkok and being marginalized communities can understand the problems of the structure like easily and easier for privileged people, if I can say that. Yeah, I don't know if I grew in Bangkok, but if my dad also raised me like this, I may also be the same. I think growing with my dad like affects me a lot, and I think these criticisms I think it's somehow combinations of everything. It's somehow a combination of my experiences, my background, and my visions, and the two possibilities, and like to be able to see these problems in the society. Yeah.
You mentioned your dad quite a bit, and what an inspiration and support he's been for you. What does he think about where you've ended up these past few years and the kind of activism you've been doing? Does he worry about you?
Actually, like, like I talk about my dad a lot, but I don't really talk to my dad. After I came to Bangkok, my dad and my mom and dad separated. So I mostly be with my mom. I mostly be with my mom, not my dad. And my dad, okay, there were some situation that he was mad at me, like when I shaved my head, he said, it's too much. So I was like really angry. And like, oh my God, you are the one who taught me to do this. Why are you saying like this? I was like so mad at him. Not for now. I think he do proud of who am I right now. And I, even though we didn't talk much to each other, I always keep like, okay, if I did something well, I think he would want to see it. I will send it to him. For me, I actually don't really know if he remember those things. Yeah. But I always remember what my dad taught me. Yeah.
Right. So we've spent the first part of this conversation talking about your upbringing and what you've done in the context of Thailand. But of course, this fits into this wider regional network of what's happening across Southeast Asia. And this taps into your involvement with Milk Tea Alliance, which then leads to the Myanmar connection. But talk about where did Milk Tea Alliance come on the scene? Where did you start? When did you start to be aware of them and to shift from realizing, these are not just Thai issues. There's actually something regional happening there. When was your consciousness broadened and where did Milk Tea Alliance come into that?
I love the way you're talking, like my consciousness broadened. Yeah, it's like that. So I know Milk Tea Alliance since it, like the beginning, I mean the meme, the online trend on the Twitter. It was the incidence of like, the sisters of the really popular BL actor like something about Taiwan, and like Chinese like netizens got so mad at it, and we like solidarity Taiwan Hong Kong, like and Taiwan Hong Kong Thailand like as a Milk Tea Alliance, and it was like a really popular and meme and like and trend in Thailand. It's definitely like the most like hilarious thing that happened at that time. But after that, there were a lot of the movement to anti-one-China policy. They have a group called Anti-One-China Thailand, Milk Tea Alliance, but as just a netizen, they were maybe activists, but they were not really like, they were the groups of people who saw the protest and will bring the Milk Tea Alliance symbols to each other. They were the former of the admin of the Facebook page I'm holding right now, so I stole the page from them. At the time I joined the protest, I was doing some action under Milk Tea Alliance just as the train, like save 12 Hong Kong youth of the incident that Zhou Shouwong like got arrested. We did something at a friends under like Milk Tea Alliance, but at the time they are still not a coup, and the Milk Tea Alliance friends of Myanmar still like haven't like happened at that time. It was the trending, it was the symbolic actions that we like activists like it, and we use it as like symbolic things like flag, hashtag, like anti-one-China, and we just go along with it. But at the time I was still in the students group and with the feminist movement. But the time I know that Milk Tea Alliance friends of Myanmar, they were built because of the coup in Myanmar in February of the 2021, right? And at that time, there's a lot of the activists in Asia and Southeast Asia, they come together and form this network to support the people of Myanmar. I didn't join in the very first beginning of this thing. I just joined the network and this movement just like 1 or 2 years ago. It was after I was exhausted from the national movement. I was exhausted from everything that was like, I was facing a lot of crashing, a lot of things that I couldn't really explain it at that time. And I know some of the senior and, I know one of the senior who was in the Milk Tea Alliance Friends of Myanmar first, and I have the parent that I mentioned that they in person right now. His name is Gate, and I am a friend of Gate's partner So at the time, Gates already like arrested and be in jail, and Gates was he was appear in the Multilands Friends of Myanmar, like networking or like events before. So people in Multilands Friends of Myanmar want to do something for him. So he was sending along and to me. So that is the starting point of me joining to giving information, because I also on the list of the 10 persons who can visit Get. So I would visit Get in person and got his message to the friends in Multilands Friends of Myanmar and doing something, some campaigns, for example, such as like, let's get rights. And at the time, there's still not a lot of the people who calling about the free political prisoners. So it was like my first agenda of Multilands Friends of Myanmar. But after that, when I joined the Multilands Friends of Myanmar, it was a reform of Multilands Thailand. And Multilands Thailand hasn't really been active, I mean, in the Friends of Myanmar. And mostly the person who active under Multilands Thailand is the like netizens online, the like former protesters in protest, and they still hold a page. And I see opportunity because they already, I think they don't really want to action anymore. It's like the situation is not really the same, and they're not active, like the page is not active. But I know someone that is like related, I know someone that I can ask, and okay, so the page like go down to me. So I can active under the same Multilands Thailand, and the followers and the engagement and the people who have been following the same thing can follow the same thing, not to stop, because it would be like so disappointed if like if it just like disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, I have a lot of opportunities to meet with Myanmar friends, and it just broaden my perspective. I would say that Thai activists and even me, we were like really inward looking in the countries. When I was protesting, I was like, oh my god, Thai politics is like so messy. We are the worst. It's really bad. But when I joined Myanmar Friends of Myanmar, I saw that. So oh no, Thailand is like one of the best one, I think. So that's the thing. So I was like, oh my god, I need to do something. So when I joined, and it was like, it's the third year anniversary of coup in Myanmar, right? And there was some calling for me to do a protest on this day because we have Multilands and we need to do something for like people of Myanmar. So I decided to do this action like in front of the embassy of Myanmar, and we hands out the free milk tea, we hands out the stickers, and doing like some creative things. And from this point, I just did a protest, and 10 days later, they announced the conscription law, right? Conscription law in Myanmar. So it was like come down like along, like when I talked to some like Burmese activists and also Thai activists, I saw a gap, like from the gap that is not really trending. I mean, Myanmar coup has been like trending like when the coup happened, but at that time it was like more of the civil war and not really people really see what is happening. So I see the gap, also see the gap of the space where we can bring like young Thai activists meeting with Burmese young activists. There's still this gap, like mostly people who are interested in Myanmar crisis, they mostly listen from like, I mean, scholar or people who like on the stage, and I mean academic, and it doesn't wrong, but I would say that it's different from the feelings of know or like listen to the people who like been through all of those experience by themselves. So I saw this gap, and we create something called Thai Students for Burma, and we bridging this gap by like bringing the communities to meet with each other, just knowing what is happening, and like to not be ignorant of what is happening like in the neighboring countries. I think it's one of my like what I call accomplishment, that one of my friends, but I have one friend, she's my best friend, she said like she have been questioning about the person who like advocate for international or like other like neighboring countries problems, because she would say that like she somehow like couldn't really advocate for something like that, because she said that like the country, like our country is still not that good. But after that, she's become more engaged with the network with multi-alliance, and she has an experience to know the what's happening in like in other countries such as like Cambodia, Vietnam, or like Myanmar. She knows like what is like why we need to talk about the countries like outside Thailand and why we need to use a chance and privilege of being Thai citizen to call for the authority, for call for the Thai government, Thai military and Thai state that like might take a role on like the other countries like crisis. So I would say that I just create this space and not to and like to be more of more awareness of what is happening around the countries. And like it also gave a lot of like to acknowledge the patterns and loops, like information operations. If I only say in just one country in Thailand, I would say, but because I listen and I have a chance to meet like friends from Philippines, from Indonesia, from Malaysia, and from other countries. So I know that like it's a pattern that authority just copy each other in the region in Southeast Asia, and it's a trending. So yeah, this experiences give me a lot of like knowledge and like a lot of the awareness of what need to be done. But I also don't want to be like just talking about international things. And at this time, I would say that, like it's the time for me to bring those knowledge to do something in my countries and to adapt it to do some things that like useful and meaningful in my country domestically. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's some powerful stuff to reflect on. And I guess going back for initially to your contact with the Myanmar friends that you made, as well as the student-to-student, peer-to-peer, people-to-people interactions that you facilitated between Burmese activists and Thai students. I'm curious, both from your part, as well as the part of the Thai students that you brought, you're coming from Thailand with a concern and criticism for the imperfections and persecutions and unfairness that is going on in Thailand. As you say, you're inward-looking. And then you meet your Burmese counterparts and you start to hear about what they're up against and what their history has been and what they're fighting for. Take us back to that time. What surprised you? What stood out? How did your interaction, as well as the interaction of the Thai students that you saw, that you facilitated, how was that impacted and how did you grow from interacting with and hearing those stories from the Burmese?
Yeah, I would say it's a challenging than me. That we like change the self-doubt into like the ability to do something broader. It's really challenging. So the first thing is just like at the time that I shift from just doing like domestic to know more about international like issues. There is sometimes I would say something that like, oh my god, as Thai activists we were like so bad, and they were like, really? And they were like, what about Burmese kids? And I was like, oh yeah, true. At least we don't have to like hold a gun as a young age. Yeah. That's a really new feeling. Yeah. And I also copied that sentiment to all my friends. This was like self-doubt and like so like inward looking and like, oh my god, we face a lot. I mean, at least you don't have to hold a gun. But for my friends who has like a good life, yeah, but the situation that is the bad side of Thailand is still really bad. I mean, the prison things, the southern of Thailand, the conflict situation. But yeah, but those stuff is common. And like in Myanmar, I would say that like everyone I encounter, they have stories and experience the bad things, the like the enforcement, like the prison, a lot of things that like I would say that like I really feel it. I really feel the generational like trauma of people, and it is really hard thing for others to like in my countries or other countries to really understand it without listening to Burmese people. Yeah, so I would say that it's a feeling that coming from inside. If you really want to shift the society, if you really want to know what is happening, not just that hashtag in this world, sometimes we really need to challenge ourselves, challenge like our past, challenge our thoughts, challenge our ego and like confidence sometimes. But I would say those challenging will lead to something new that we can explore.
So the experience of meeting these Burmese was in and of itself a challenge to your inward way of looking at Thai society. And you mentioned how that very act of challenge can also be an experience of growth, of inspiration, of learning. And so in what ways were you challenged as an activist and as an individual by hearing these stories of what the Burmese were facing? And in what ways did you grow as a result?
Luckily, I was kind of open-minded person. So when I started Multilands Thailand, Friends of Myanmar and those stuff, like some person might be like, okay, I don't really know me as well. I don't really know what is happening in Myanmar. I don't know the context of politics. I don't really know about those stuff. Mm-hmm. But if me in the past, like before Friends of Myanmar, I would say, I don't know, but I will talk about mine, something like that. But after I joined the Multilands of Friends of Myanmar, I would say, like, I don't know, but I will try to listen as much as I can to understand it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's challenging me is not the way that how am I going to deal with the feelings of that, but it's the feeling of how am I going to deal with it. Like, I mean, even though I met a lot of Burmese friends, sometimes they might feel like hopeful to meet me or just to meet Thai students, but for me, inside us, we do really know that, like, we don't really have a power that much to do anything. So it is and I also have talked to some senior from some NGO, and the situation in Myanmar also taught me a lot of the way of actions and advocacy that have a lot of dynamics and had a lot of the layers that some of the issues and agenda, it might not require to be public things. Like, I mean, I used to do a protest. I used to bring spotlight to stuff to the agenda. But I learned from the Myanmar things that, like, not every issues that is, like, good from doing that, especially about the situation that really sensitive. So, but if we just point out to the, like, the benefits should be, like, to the people. So I was more concerned of how am I and how my friends is really going to do something supportive. I even hold an event called, like, Peace in a Feminist Way, and the topic is about, like, how young activists can support Burmese activists without doing harm. I even do this event for securing my insecurity. Yeah, but I would say that how I come through and, like, overcome, like, those kind of self-doubt and those challenging that struggling, I would say, like, there is the thing that I'm doing right now is about the information operation and information war things. Another thing that I realized after I learned about Myanmar situation, I have been monitoring what is happening in Myanmar and also what is happening about, like, policy in Thailand towards refugees, right? So last year, we saw a sign of the rising of the nationalist narrative in Thailand that organized by the yellow movement and, like, right-wing groups that is still organized before the Thai Cambodia happened. But we can see that this kind of narrative, they don't just want to attack the opposition, such as, like, People's Party, but they also want to attack the government, the civilian government. So mostly people would say, like, IO would come from government, but in this situation it's more complex. And for the first target that they target is Myanmar people, not Cambodian. They have been spreading fake news. They have been spreading, like, disinformation. They have been spreading stuff, like, to twist the policy, like, the benefits. Like, I mean, if government launch some good policy to Burmese people, they would shift it into, like, government is now giving citizens to Burmese kids automatically. It's something like this. It all appear on the news, but somehow people more empathize Burmese people because of the earthquake as well, also the junta, not as Cambodian. But this situation and this context gave me the ability to and gave me opportunity to bridge between Myanmar and the Thai politics, because some people might think that, like, okay, it is about Myanmar people, but it's not just about Myanmar people, but it is Thai politics. But they use Myanmar people as a tool and use nationalist narrative as a tool. It doesn't matter if it's, like, Myanmar Cambodians or, like, Muslim people or like Rohingya, but they just want something as the triggering point, the nationalist sentiments of people to happen. And after we saw a sign, the first group that believe us is also the Burmese people in like activist circle, because they also have faced this from the Rohingya propaganda that happened inside the country. So they really know what are we going to tell them. And we also launched like some background paper, and they were the first person. And we have been struggling to tell these things to people, even Thai friends. And somehow, like, some people still think that it's not really gonna happen. They wouldn't think that the migrants, the anti-migrants narrative would shift into be like the main things that would like destroy the democracy in Thailand. But at this point, we all know what is happening and how the nationalist sentiments is still can work with the people. And yeah, I would say it's like the calling still now we collect a lot of the information, like, and the narrative that they use with the people of Myanmar. And we don't only just advocate this to Thai people, but I also just do the open tech camp in Kuala Lumpur about the analyzing the patterns of disinformation in Thailand towards anti-Myanmar. And the main audiences that I want to call is Burmese people, the person who live in Thailand, to know what is really been going. Sometimes they don't do it in Burmese language, you know, they do it in Thai. So Burmese people may not know like what is really happening, except some of the incidents that they want to do the scare atmospheres or like threaten Burmese people, and there's like a mustache guy raiding the market and arrested Myanmar migrants like with police. Is there something that really like direct targeting the Myanmar people and make them feel scared? So I would say if I have an information to give some of the context for Burmese activists or Burmese people, I should do it. Like, at least we know what is really happening. Yeah. So this is the first time that I can see that I can do something to fill the gap. That is what's missing. After doing something desperate for few months. Yeah. So I'm still working on it now.
Well, what's really interesting also with what you've done is there's this strategic aspect, because there's the Thailand's domestic climate has been restrictive in the sense that it, in some ways it's almost safer, a cover for you as a Thai activist, to be able to post about Myanmar's atrocities and rather than directly criticizing the Thai government, because that is able to indirectly underscore these principles of democracy and human rights that also then come back and reverberate and reflect upon Thailand's situation. But it avoids the most sensitive security issues in Thailand of what you're able to do. And so this is also just a very interesting dynamic of how solidarity works, because you're, in some ways, this is a byproduct. I mean, you're not advocating about Myanmar because you secretly just wanted to get back to Thailand. You're really concerned about Myanmar, and you're doing these things because you want to affect Thai policy, you want to affect Thai society, you want to affect the wider Thai people's opinion and the experience of Myanmar migrants and refugees that are coming to Thailand. So you have these genuine aspirations, and yet there also is this very interesting byproduct that through this advocacy of another government, so Bangkok's not really going to come after you for this, that you're able to talk so openly about issues of human rights and atrocities and democracy and coups and some of these other things, that you can bring these topics into the public sphere of ideas that in a way might be a bit less dangerous than talking about it directly in a Thai political context. Yeah, do you find that?
Yeah. Talking about like migrants and Myanmar in Thailand, I would say like any topics without criticize King is safer than everything. I would say that the thing interesting for me is how like we look through one problems from Myanmar and how it's linked to our like current like state right now. But at some point, from analyzing this kind of operations, like from Myanmar or even from the state, it always come back to the point that we need to criticize the security, like dynamics of like security perspective of Thailand, of those stuff. So some point I thought that I did the safe thing. It come back to the dangerous things. like against disinformation operations is somehow against the perspective of security of the state, because they need to do this kind of operations to protect the security of the country. So in the end, we can't really change that perspective, can't change the policy of security of the countries. So we need to see what we can do in between. We can do like, okay, at some point, can we protect the safe? Can we calling for the safety for Myanmar migrants? Okay, you can. Okay, if you're not going to stop that, at least you shouldn't like affect or like doing dirty stuff to the marginalized communities and something like that. That's the point. But to counter those operations directly, counter disinformation is impossible for just communities and for the people. Like, how can we find like thousands, like hundreds of soldiers who type the same things in the same times on TikTok? It's just impossible. So to see a sign from the rising of military or rising of nationalist narrative, just give us a sign of what is going to happen or what is their plan to do, what is like they want to do, or like, or to give us a sense of like, okay, there should be some triggering points. And instead of countering it directly to the operation, we can find some way to counter it, like the possible way of promote something that is like achievable. So yeah, just one topic, but we can think a lot of it.
Right. Well, another thing that you've done is you've worked with Thai policymakers to restrict the Thai banking system from being able to have Burmese generals and Burmese military benefit from it.
I would give credit to the National Security Committee that the leader, Rang Simanrom, who is like in the People's Party, he's quite good. Mm-hmm. And he always have been doing this thing to advocate about like Burmese situation, and also advocate to the bank, also advocate to the companies to not involve in this like war crimes. And yeah, the statement that I gave to them is the statement that made by Blood Money Campaign, which they gathered like more than 200 organizations in Myanmar. So it was a multi-lens, just the in-between person who sent the letter from the voices of Burmese people directly to the authority or to the people who have the responsibilities. Yeah, but it's also up to the train, like, but also the good advocate, like, the bank and the companies definitely don't want to call themselves like involved in the war crimes, and also the hard work of the committee. So that is the thing that effective the most at that time, that the companies and bank also they also work with the committee to solve the problems.
Right. So then taking a wider scope out of the Thailand, the internal issues and the Thai-Myanmar relations, looking now at the broader scope of Milk Tea Alliance, what does it mean to you as an individual and as an activist that you're tapped into this wider network? You're not just in Thailand and conversing with Thai people alone, but that you're now part of this broader conversation with individuals from, in some ways, very different backgrounds and very different places, although there are these bonds that tie you together. But what does that mean to you as a person to be tapped into a network like that?
I think it just gave me the opportunity to know more. Like, it just gave me, like, I would say the privilege to be able to listen to borders perspective and border experiences like you mentioned. And I think it is also the good chance and good opportunity if I want to do something regionally. I mean, there is not much of the agendas or not of the issues that we can be calling for international things, like example, like Indonesia's protest, right? And they're calling for international solidarity. This is a time that we know that we need to use, like, we need to use like this network to do solidarity to the people. I mean, we might not calling for international or like regional authority for some domestic problems, like somehow kicking out the prime minister. Okay, you can solidarity, but it was not going to be like really make sense, like compared to like showing up, like stop police brutality or like sharing the same pain. Like we have been through this kind of actions from police as you, so we need to show solidarity. Yeah, so this network just gave me a lot of opportunities to learn, to broaden my perspective, and somehow it is fun to, because I really appreciate my life that I didn't just grow in the international communities, but I grew from the domestic and national and regional, and I mean in the countries, because like, so I have my friends, I have my roots here that I can bring, and I can bridge the gap, and I can bridge to my multi-alliance network. If I just grow in the international or like regional network, like in NGO or CSO, I would say that like I would feel more powerless.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because like, if I don't really know like about my countries, or like not having friends or like background in my countries, and to have regional things, like I would say that like it's not a really like strong feelings. It's not really a strong feelings. I think that the feelings that keep pushing me is to know what am I doing. Yeah, to know what am I doing to my friends, to my community, and to not just like float. Yeah, to be on ground, to grounding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've asked you in what ways you've benefited and grown as a person because of your access and conversation with Milk Tea Alliance. I'd like to follow that up by asking you, what does it feel like when you're physically in a room? Because so much of this is virtual and conversing on different platforms or encrypted chats or Zoom calls or something. But yet there are some events that happen with Milk Tea Alliance where you all come together and convene in a certain time and place, and you're physically there together in a room, whether you're enjoying a meal or just talking informally or doing workshops or something like that. What is it? What's the feeling like when you're actually in a room with these other Milk Tea Alliance individuals?
We just went to Darpak together, right? Actually, it was fun. I mean, it was fun. It's always, I feel like, we are like hilarious communities, and we always like talking about funny things, and like there's sort of cross generations memes and jokes, like I'm Gen Z and they are millennials. So we are like somehow, we talk about politics, of course, but we also share like funny things and like have a normal conversations as people. I would say that we are not just it's not just a co-worker and stuff, but we are more like our friends, like, yeah, friends, communities that support each other when it needs. And I saw and I met them quite frequently, like with Elvie. Also went to the conference with her, so to spend time with each of the Milk Tea Alliance folks, like each by each, and to have like quality time with them, do really helps me like to feel connect to Milk Tea Alliance folks, not just like a meetings and stuff, but like to be in true, like, because me and Elvie were in Copenhagen, it was so cold, and the food was so bad, and I know. It was even in the conference about people power, and to be in those situations together, that we were freezing and we were going to die together and we need rice. It was really the memorable experience for me, not just to know them as a workers, like co-workers of Milk Tea Alliance, but know them as like a friends. Yeah.
You mentioned the regional connections that you're developing and the work that you're doing to want to encourage progressive politics and democracy, human rights, these things in the region. And yet we are living in a world where it's no longer this black and white, if it ever was, of certain ideals being held in one part of the world and perhaps being a bit questionable in others. We're seeing a rise of nativist, nationalist, racist, authoritarian, dictatorial type of politics across the world now in a really alarming way. And I think that's also what makes places like the current conflict in Myanmar, as well as Ukraine, so incredibly important and significant on a geopolitical, geostrategic scale, because you're seeing these kind of front lines of battling, you know, two different ideals. It's not just a violent conflict between people, but it's also a conflict between ideals of governance and society. And so as we open this conversation up from the domestic to the neighbors in Myanmar and Thailand to the regional and now to the international, what are your thoughts on the direction of where we're seeing in the world going, and where does your activism and the wider Milk Tea Alliance activism, where does that fit into what we're now seeing on a global scale?
So, because of the trending that is happening in the like around the world right now, that like people tend to like right shift to the right, and people tend to be more nationalistic. Now in the regions, Milk Tea Alliance Thailand like proposed new frame of Milk Tea Alliance. We want to bridge and link between the disinformation trends as the Southeast Asian trends. Like, we bridge the Milk Tea Alliance with the disinformation trends and how we like see the patterns in each country and how can we drive it regionally. That is the thing that we want to do as a like regional like network to fight back and counter these trends. But yeah, okay. And in Thailand, right now it's a mess things, I think. There are still a lot of conditions that we need to see first, like how the how each of parties gonna decide for themselves, so we can know what is going to be next. But there's gonna be the election soon, and I can see that the loop is coming up again. Like after military rising, we don't really know if they got what they want right now, or they still have some deals to get to the point what they want. And if they don't get it, what is going to be next? I mean, it's still like questionings, and somehow the people rising is going to come back again. Yeah, in Thailand, I would say. So, but in the global, it's not happened in just Southeast Asia and in Thailand. We all know the trending, the nationalist narrative, and it's somehow something that it's out of control. If what can I say? It's like out really out of control. But it requires the people who knows this, who knows the loop, who recognize the patterns, and in the national level and regional level, we need the person who have been through this. And I would say that like young activist folks need some successful stories from senior, so we can think of any ways to move forward. Yeah, successful story, way to counter it, and somehow. Yeah, especially the information operations. We've done some workshop about like the solutions, like, and the metrics about what is where to do, what is wasteful, and we see that we lack a lot of the solutions like about countering these things. So yeah, the missing key for me is this thing about like the new pattern or like the new method of countering this like politics like messy in Thailand. It might be like negotiation, like it can be anything, like actions, or like actions in the right place in the right time. It can be anything, but yeah, just want to listen first, thinking or deciding what to do next. Yeah.
Right. And a big part of Milk Tea Alliance kind of vibe from the previous interviews that we've also done with some of the individuals you've mentioned, we definitely recommend listeners to go and check that out. Particularly Evie, you talked about your experience with Evie from Indonesia and Copenhagen. And in the interview with Evie, we talked quite a bit about this dynamic of fun and about how the element of fun was a big part of the activism. And one of the questions I posed to her when we talked last year, which I'll also pose to you, was this concept of this kind of pushback against fun and this activism is not supposed to be fun. It's hard work. And these are really serious institutional structures that we're pushing back against and that we're trying to create change. And this is not something light to do. We need to have this serious attitude in order to be able to achieve the success. So obviously kind of setting up a contrarian view for this preference and prioritization of the role that fun has in activism with Milk Tea Alliance. And, you know, this is very intentional. It's not a byproduct. It's not something that happens accidentally. I've been to the closed door Milk Tea Alliance meetings and trainings. And, you know, this fun aspect is baked into the cake of the vibe of how the activism is operating, which, you know, I think to some degree might be a bit of departure from some of the activism I've seen, at least in the West in a previous generation, where it was a lot more serious and in some ways lacked a bit of a sense of humor, I guess you can say, given the, which, you know, is one doesn't want to necessarily criticize from the outside, given the very serious topics they're trying to take in. But you have done things differently with Milk Tea Alliance. And so I'll ask the same question to you that I asked to Evie. Why this emphasis on bringing fun into very serious and heavy elements of activism?
Yeah, I would say like fun have like two benefits to the movement. First, it's good for mental health in the community. Mm-hmm. And the second is fun is like chill things, like attract more people to joining. In Milk Tea Alliance Thailand, we just fundraise to like the Myanmar earthquake, like a relief. And We fundraise by selling stickers, like the pack of stickers from 23 artists. They collaborate and they draw a sticker for us. And most of them are like BL, like boy love artists. Like they are like one of the stickers like is a really, really, really popular artist, comic artist. She drew comic about the relationship between our our old like monarch with the Burmese monarch. Mm-hmm. Something like that. It's like so funny. I like the concept. It's like blow out my and these stickers like get a lot of attention and people fundraise to Myanmar because of the stickers. It's like kind of pop culture, right? And the BL culture and like supportive from like those fandom. And I would say that it is positive things to use, like both inside and outside, to attract people and to like to maintain the community. And Milk Tea Alliance coming from fun. I mean, if you could say we come from fun to make fun of Chinese, and that time Milk Tea Alliance come from like making fun of one China policy, making fun of the Winnie the Pooh, making fun of everything, and fun of like feeling the collaborative and like solidarity under like Milk Tea Alliance or boba tea. At that time, it's all about fun. It's all about training about fun things, fun jokes, and Southeast Asians spoke like fun stuff. Like they are hilarious. Like, you know, always. Even the Indonesian stuff, they also make fun of like people, looting the MP's house, and they brought like Iron Man, Labubus, bathtub. Even like situation is so intense, they still like find some fun ways to deal with it. Yes. So we don't really like blow up my mind from intense names and like straight out. Yeah.
Right. Another thing I'm noticing is just this transnational solidarity is very interesting in this current generation. And especially if we just take the isolated look at Myanmar and Thailand, you know, there have been such strong nationalist tendencies and outlooks between Myanmar and Thailand for so many decades, if not centuries. And, you know, to a large extent, there are many Thais who have really never forgiven the Burmese for the sacking of Ayutthaya. You know, going back to Ayutthaya still kind of drives a lot of the nationalistic fervor of, and you see that in so much like Thai media and movies, is these, you know, Burmese kind of monsters ransacking the capital and, you know, toppling over Buddha statues and taking women as slaves and all this other kind of thing. And so, you know, one of the things that's really remarkable about Milk Tea Alliance is that you have people from all different backgrounds of religions, ethnicities, skin colors, backgrounds, countries, obviously, and the solidarity that's being shown transcends this. But in the case of Myanmar and Thailand, which have not really enjoyed close relations over the years, and there certainly has been, you know, nationalistic fervor whipped up in Thailand, you know, again going back to this sacking of the Ayutthaya, that, you know, you and many in your generation in Thailand have really transcended and come out of that attempt at propaganda to see through it and to see the commonalities rather than allow those differences to separate you. So the question I'm wondering is, what do you see in older generations, older Thai generations that fell into that kind of conditioned nationalist thinking? Of course, you know, don't want to paint a broad brush. There are many people that are different and, you know, don't want to make blanket statements. But to a large degree, we didn't see this kind of solidarity manifesting in previous generations or previous decades the way it is now. So what is it about previous generations of Thai society that fell into this kind of nationalist way of thinking? And what is it about this present generation, or at least those like you in this present youthful generation, that's allowing to see and engage differently and not fall into those same traps?
I think the transnational trends is a really Gen Z things. I also got this comment from many of activists that's like transnational about like Myanmar Palestinians are like we need to fight for the same things, like we also have a chance that like no one's liberated without like everyone's liberated or something like that, right? I think the one of the keys that we other generations that we access the information like more than the previous generations. And I think the previous generations, they were living in this situation that is more like restrictive, like from accessing information from like the intense propaganda from state. Even I somehow annoyed the senior or like previous generations, but I don't blame them that they would feel nationalist because they were in the war situation somehow like that. It's somehow understandable if we look at their generation or like how they have been living under those situations. And somehow Gen Z just living in the point of those outcome of nationalists and propaganda, those of things like melt down, and it shows and we have like internet, we have TikTok, we have social media to express our opinions, and we got more of free speech and freedom of expressions, and democracy and human rights become things. So I think like it's just not about the generation, but it's just about the background and the atmosphere and like a lot of the conditions that shaped the generations at that time. Even in like among my friends and Gen Z things, the transnational things, I in the peace parade that we organized in the Bangkok Pride Parade, we link between the Gaza and Myanmar, like in Palestine and Myanmar, because we think that like if you wanna calling for like the oppressive situation and like a genocide on the world, please call to Myanmar as well. Even in Thailand, people don't really pay attention to Myanmar as Palestine situation for real. They don't really aware of it compared to like Palestine situation, but that's still a thing. It doesn't like we have to blame no one, but I think it's somehow we can see the gap that is happened and just feel it like somehow to inform people that how Rohingya or like Myanmar people or people in Southern or Muslim also experience those violence and harm. So I think, yeah, it's about what shape and the conditions that we are like living under more than like things like generations things. We also have the things that we also don't have the things that previous generations they have. I mean, I think most of Gen Z somehow like they don't like to read and they might have a very short kind of information because they read it all in shorts on TikTok or on Instagram. So we don't really have those kind of cool informative discussions because we all got informed from TikTok, and it's kind of somehow weak things. Like we can talk about big word, but it's just a big word, but no meanings. So I think it's the things that we need to work more as a generation. Yeah.
Well, here we are having a 2-hour conversation. So I certainly hope that Gen Z will tune into this long form discussion.
For real, yeah, please.
Or else we'll have to slice down this 2 hours into 30-second TikTok explainers.
Yeah, with like video games playing, and you need to like put sound in video games.
I'll leave that to you. I don't. Okay. I think I have the skills of navigating a 2-hour conversation, but yeah, not the skills of turning that into a 30-second TikTok, yeah, that educates you and informs you at this and entertains you at the same time. So then I thank you so much for joining us and talking about your journey and what you've been up to these past few years, where that's come into concert with Myanmar and with Milk Tea Alliance.
Yeah, the conversation is like really, it was fun. And it was the questions, like some questions, it was the question I hope someone in one day would ask me. So I was like, yeah. Mm. And it was an opportunity for me to talk so long. Like, I normally don't really talk so long like this. Mm. And it was fun. And I hope that this conversation would lead like people to know more about the Thai's political context and especially the young activist communities, like what we have been through. And I hope not just seeing about the past, but I hope people who listen to this would like wait and see, and like, I mean, if they want to see like what is going to be like happen next in the Thai communities, like Thai activists and the rising of people, I hope this podcast would give the interest for people to like to wait for that moment. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Insight Myanmar Podcast. Each episode we produce is offered freely and always will be. Our goal is to inform, engage, and inspire as many people as possible with stories and voices that matter. And thanks to your support, we've been able to reach tens of thousands of listeners across the globe. This is truly remarkable. But to sustain this momentum, we need your help. Even if just a small percentage of our listeners committed to a very modest monthly pledge, we would not only be able to sustain our momentum, but grow. Even better, you might consider becoming a member to deepen your engagement with this platform and thereby gain access to additional content and other exclusive benefits. So, if you found value in what we offer and want to help secure the future of this work, however you want to make that happen, please visit insightmyanmar.org/donation to make a pledge, or navigate to insightmyanmar.org/membership to look at our member options. With your help, we can keep this work alive and thriving. Yarananda, Dayananda, Yarananda, 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 Yarananda,